New York's Chinatown is one of the few neighborhoods in Manhattan where parks are still packed with multi-generational, four-season activity, where diverse cultures, cuisines, and traditions are found spilling out of storefronts and community centers, and where immigrants and non-English speakers can find a familiar foothold in a new and different country.Still, over the past few decades, gentrification has brought about significant changes in many Chinese and other foreign-born shops in the U.S. The struggle to adapt is felt in Chinatowns across the U.S. as heritage enterprises and new ventures work to maintain their cultural authenticity. So, Tony, I'll go to you for this American story. What...are the conditions like for Chinatowns in the U.S.? And could you please also explain a little bit of this concept of Chinatown in different American cities?
Sure. Well, in recent years, there's acceleration and redevelopment and rent increases. You know, a lot of businesses in American Chinatowns have been forced to close and relocate. And in San Francisco's Chinatown, which is the first and the one that, where the tradition is the most deep,the community finds itself at a crossroads trying to fend off, well, these raising costs of living, gentrification, and welcoming change. In San Francisco, there's more than 140,000 residents, you know, most of them Chinese, but a lot of them are finding it very difficult to open up, keep their shops open. And a lot of them are looking to relocate to other locations. And in New York...You know, small shops like Feng Yin Tu, which is a popular tofu product store, and the new 25-cent store, which I've heard about when I was in New York, one of the new neighborhood's last reliable sources for sewing supplies, have closed down. And new art galleries and upscale restaurants have just flourished all over these areas. And so what we're seeing is a lot of the traditional Chinese culture and shops and the feel of China when you go to these neighborhoods, it's slowly starting to change, and it's not really the Chinatown that you're used to when you're going to some of these cities. And last month, Haagen-Dazs Chinatown shop, the first store of the brand name in Manhattan, will close at the end of November next month.When the lease expires. The store has been in Chinatown for about 41 years, and it will be missed by a lot of people. And according to the owner of the store, the landlord plans to raise the rent again, which is more than $10,000 per month, in addition to utilities and real estate tax. And the store is already struggling to pay close to $20,000 per month. So it decided to shut down next month. And this is just a very common story of what's been going on in a lot of areas all over the country. You know, for example, like Washington, D.C., where Chinatown is down to only a few blocks, marked by a lot of other companies that are moving in, you know, Hooters and Starbucks, non-traditional Chinese businesses are moving in, and it's really changing the culture of the area. So it's enough to warrant a bit of attention, especially from a lot of the Chinese that are living in those areas and for America as well. So it's actually a pretty big deal right now.
So because gentrification sounds like a very big word to a non-English speaker. So if I am understanding this right, what you're describing is that a formerly not that expensive, not that high-end neighborhood,due to the passing of time, it changed, it upgraded to somewhere that the rent is not high enough for the landlord there. They believe, oh, this neighborhood is changing, it's getting better, so I am entitled to change the rent a little bit to improve, not improve, to make it higher so that I can get my money count. And that drives out the original people living in that neighborhood and attracting some new business, some new people, some mid-class citizen that think, well, this is a nice neighborhood, I can live here. Is that gentrification, the kind of gentrification we're talking about right now?
Well, that's on the surface, yes. It's an attempt for the city to, you could say, develop a certain area that's a bit traditional or old-fashioned and try to modernize it and make it a bit more marketable for tourism and for people all over the country. So yes, on one end, that is one definition of gentrification. But on the other end, Gentrification can also be seen as the arrival of wealthier people in an existing urban district, and a related increase in rent and property values, and changes the district's character and culture. But I think the underlying issue here is how it displaces a lot of the people in those areas. And these areas tend to be from people who are a bit lower socioeconomical statuses, people who are, I guess you could say the poor of the United States are in these areas, and these areas are where the landlords raise the rent and drive out a lot of the people that are living there. And this is a pretty common issue, not just in Chinatown, but just in a lot of big cities in the United States. For example, like my grandmother's from Brooklyn, New York, and a lot of our most of the community there is primarily Hispanic and African-American. And that was in the 80s, but now it's completely changed. And, the landlord is asking my grandmother, trying to buy my grandmother out for 10 or 20,000, which in New York would probably last you half a year. And then after that, she would be homeless.
Oh.
So it's a really big trend that's going on in a lot of the bigger cities where rents are just going up, and it's just changing the demographic and the culture of the area. So for some people, it's very positive, especially for the landowners, the people who own the property and are looking to capitalize and earn more. But for the people who are living there, it's a bit of a problem, because they're unable to live there anymore, and they'll be driven out, and they'll have to find another place to live. And it's a pretty tough time.
That's very interesting. Something we are seeing possibly in many places around the world, but it's been manifested in a very different way. Because, like, Tony, I sensed from your sharing and explanation just now that there are some strong feelings that's tied to this term gentrification. And from a Chinese point of view, I think we're definitely seeing this in China, but possibly we didn't come up with this term. And people sort of saw it as a byproduct of urbanization. And urbanization has been seen as an overwhelmingly positive thing. It comes in glitter in China, because we are a country that has seen 40 years of fast development, and we started from poverty, from a low standing point. And for years, people just wanted better livelihoods, enhanced living standards. And when you see a neighborhood that used to be occupied by shacks, and then strengthened shacks, and then possibly buildings made of brick, but they were constructed in these hutongs, or these narrow alleyways in Beijing, for example, and there was a thriving community there. People knew each other. We all lived in bungalows, and people shared stories, said hi to each other every morning, and discussed dinner the same day. And it was just thin walls that that separated people, but people felt, I belong here. And then as time moved on, well, there's this new concept of high rises, when you can live in apartments, when you can have your own toilet instead of sharing one. And people wanted that. Yeah, and
naturally.
And that was just, I guess, the microcosm of what happened here in Chinese cities for years. And what's really interesting here, I find, is, of course, there is nostalgia about now communities are broken up. Where's my community? Is it my neighborhood in this apartment? But I don't really know my neighbors. And, of course, older folks that had the experience of living in the narrow alleyways called hutongs in Beijing, they were like, yeah, oh, my good neighbor, the good old memories. But when you can have such a better
living standard, people didn't really, or still don't really seem to be that agitated, or there, it's not such a strongly politicized issue. So I wonder, why is there this stark difference?
Well, from a lot of the, since I've been here in China, some of my friends have mentioned this, where certain areas of where they grew up were redeveloped, and then they had to leave and live in a different part of China. But they also mentioned that there was some type of subsidy or something that was given to them to help them go and start over somewhere else, which can be tough if you grow up in a certain area and you've identified this place as home. But in the U.S., we're not seeing that there's any subsidy or any type of assistance to help with the relocation of the people in these communities. A lot of these people are not giving anything to go with. So this has a lot to do with the negative feelings, and some of the areas that, again, have been targeted are people who are typically poor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the poor areas are being redeveloped, and these people actually have no place to go. When their lease is up, their rent goes sky high, and they have to go and live with friends and family, and some of them are even homeless. So this is definitely an issue where a lot of people are feeling a lot of negativity and are marching. Last month, I believe, in New York, there were people marching down the street saying gentrification kills. I mean, it's a really big issue because people are left with nothing. And I think that's the big distinction between what's going on here in some of these Chinatowns and in the United States. And on a residential level, people just don't have anything to go with. Mm. And so they are forced to either go somewhere else. I read on the Times magazine about a lot of Chinese actually looking to come back to China, since China's, you know, economically doing mm-hmm. very well. So some mm-hmm. people are looking to just come back to China, you know, because they have this disappointment with the quote unquote American dream. And I believe that attracts a lot of people to the U.S. But at this time in history, it seems that the dream is waning, or some people would say dead.
Well, the thing about the American dream, one core component is you have your own house, right?
Right.
And that's also, I think, shared in the Chinese dream to some extent, that I think it's within your human rights to want and own the place that you live in, or at least after paying the mortgage of 30 years, then I have a place of mine. That continues to become a dream that many people strive for. Tony, what you say, it really moves me. And what I'm, the next question, you know, I might run the risk of sound cold-blooded, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So, yes, we understand there is the sentimental side to it. But isn't this also sort of a picture of how cities develop? And it's always that it's going to be the disadvantaged, the poorer areas, and you improve those areas because the rich areas are already the way they are, right? Mm. And then isn't this just the cold, hard fact? And it is the pattern of modernization and development. What do you think, Neil Holian?
Well, to me, if we are talking about those people who are struggling with survival, who find themselves homeless because the rent is so high, of course, my heart goes to them. And of course, I believe that's when the government need to step in and hammer out a certain kind of plan to help those people, like the subsidies Tony has mentioned that happened here in China. But there is another group of people that they believe it is our community. They're not wrong. It is, well, or it was their community, and they don't want to leave the community, not because the rent is so high that they can't pay for it anymore, but because the atmosphere is changing, because the characteristics of the community is no longer there. They believe that we are entitled of owning this place, and we don't want to see the changes. And to those people, I am going to sound a little cold-hearted there, because I'm going to say to them that not everything old is worth preserving. I believe it is possible for some certain historian to say, okay, your community is so so special, and it represents a certain period of a majority of people's life, and that is why we're preserving it, so in the future we would know where we are from. But it is possible that for some people, they just live in their own little world. They don't really understand what the outside world is, what is happening out there, and they believe what they have is the best, and that I don't agree with. I think the world is getting smaller and smaller in terms of exchanges and culture, meeting with other cultures. And in, from that sense, it is a village, is a global village right now. And we want freedom, we want liberty. But that kind of liberty can only happen if you give up a certain right of yours. So in exchange of some other rights, we are not living alone on this planet. So from that sense, I think for those people who believe their community is the best community, it is not actually the case. And of course, you can go to another place and establish another nice neighborhood with your friends and with the people who share the same interests of yours and start something new there. And I believe the something new would also be something better.
Well, you certainly have a more of a fluidity view on the changes in society and in the cities, the arrangements of cities, I feel. Tony, what do you, I see you very pensive and having something to say here.
I definitely agree with what the Hong Lin mentioned in terms of moving on and not clinging to what's old and moving forward and starting something new. I think this is part of life. I think the big distinction here in this case, unfortunately, in the States is that there is no, it's virtually very difficult for these individuals to actually do that with no help. So I think the key here, the main difference between society, the gentrification that's going on here in the States and in the Chinatowns and a lot of these communities is that there's nothing to help these communities thrive. It's more of on the surface, it's, yeah, we're going to develop this area and make it better, but we're not going to help the people that are there stay. So in another way, it's a communication to the people that we really want you out. So it's a really hard reality for people to face, and a lot of people are trying to counter it. And I believe that there are ways to counter it, but it's just a matter of mobilizing. You have to be, well, a stakeholder in the properties in the area and, you know, become part of some of the organizations that facilitate the, you know, the construction and some of these developers. You have to mobilize into a community, but it seems to be really tough, especially if you don't actually own the property that you're living there with. So it's a really difficult situation for a lot of people back home. And I feel that here in China, at least if there's some type of subsidy that's given, you can definitely move on a lot easier.
I think here we need to certainly do one just clarification here, because the Chinese government is not charity.
Oh.
It's not. It's not giving out subsidy just to anybody who lives there. I want to live there if I can get money for that reason. It's not like that at all. It's because people that owned property there, and when there are major new projects developing this whole area and the government buys them out, often through tough negotiations, and often people get a lot of money from the government or whatever partnership it happened to be. And then they get the money to move out. So the part here I don't necessarily understand is that in the U.S., in a land that respects the protection of private property, isn't it a similar process that people would get bought out, at least get a boatload of money so they can do something with in replacement? So I think this is the part that I think is a little confusing for me, that I suppose, yes, renters is a different story,
right?
But you're a renter and there's the other side of things. But for those that own property there, like these Chinatown store owners, then don't they get compensation as part of market economy?
I think what we have here is some of these owners in some of these Chinatowns, they don't actually own the rights to that land. And so they have a long lease. And when the lease expires, then the real owner raises the rent really, really high. And I think that's the case with Mr. Liu with the Haagen-Dazs shop in Chinatown.
And Haagen-Dazs, how ironic, in an American ice cream shop in Chinatown.
Right. And so, and I think this is what we're having, in that a lot of the owners of these shops are just, they're not able to pay it. I mean, it's the amount of money that you have to earn to keep a shop open. It's impossible. So, and yes, and I believe that the people who do own the land, they are offered a lot of money from different developers who want to develop the land. And yeah, it's their right to raise the rent if they're going to be compensated for it. But it's just that a lot of people that are in those communities that's been living there a long time have no place to go.
A kind of similar equivalent I can think of is the so-called Chengzhongcun here in China. That's the villages that's in the cities. That's because people there are living a comparatively lower standards of life, but everything around them is very expensive, and maybe the rent will someday raise, and they will have problem living there as well.
And we saw the most famous example being a village within the city in the city of Shenzhen, where we've seen the housing price skyrocket in the last 20 years. And certainly, when the housing price fluctuates like this, it's going to place people of a certain social class in a certain area. And that's part of the thing called economics and the invisible hand. And I think certainly to keep people happy in the long term, there's some sort of government intervention or welfare system that can be implemented.
Definitely.
Yeah, but then there's also another issue of fairness and all those things that will arise. We'll be back after this short break.